Welcome back to the Wheel Every Weekend podcast. It's Ian and Brittany, and today we're going to talk about off-roading 101. This is like basic introductory off-roading stuff. Sorry we haven't done these in a while. We just kind of got bored. But the last one got like a couple thousand listens, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get bored. Well, maybe we got bored. But also, like, the whole world is collapsing, so it's kind of hard to focus.
I was just focused on the truck stuff, though. So, okay. But people have still been listening to these, which is cool. Can't believe that. So I did finally sit down and listen to a couple of them, and we pretty much tell the same three stories every single episode. And it's kind of hard to listen to be honest.
Well, I blame maybe the alcohol. We're going to do less alcohol.
Yeah. I'm like pretty much doing none at all. Brittany is going to drink, but that's just because she drinks.
I poured three shots in yours right now.
Yeah, I'm like fucking 250 pounds. It's nothing.
God.
All right, so we're going to start off talking about choosing tires. And I want to say that I am super happy with the Toyos we run on the truck.
I feel like, okay, so before that we had the Gladiators.
Yeah, which were not so good.
Yeah, they did not stay round.
No, I don't think they started out round, and they're not balanceable. But the Toyo's been great. I just don't like that they're load range C. But I've tried a bunch of different tires. I've had Goodyear, Maxxes, Toyo's, BFGs.
It's hard to find something that fits all of your needs.
Yeah, that's the thing, is you got to think, like, what percentage of driving do you do that's on-road versus off-road? So even if you look at us with our, like, crazy long trips on the freeway and stuff, we should probably have a 40-inch all-terrain. Because still, like, 80% of our driving is on-road and, like, daily driving it once we're done with this version again, which, of course, is going to take forever for no reason. But they don't really make a 40-inch all-terrain, though. I think the closest is, like, Toyo has a mud/all-terrain, the RT, and I think that's available in a 37. You might be able to get it in a 40, but you got to have, like, some giant rims on it. So it's more of, like, a show-off kind of thing. One of the weird things with tires is that, like, concerning load ranges, you can have completely different ratings even in the same load range. So you can have like a BF Goodrich KO2 and different sizes that are load range C might be different. Or I was looking it up earlier and I found a KO2 that's load range C that's rated for 1985 pounds at 50 psi, and then I found a load range D that's rated for less. It's rated at 1930 pounds at 65 psi. So you went up a load range and you lost 55 pounds in tire load ratings. That's another thing to be cognizant of, is that not all load range C, D, and E tires are the same.
Yeah, that makes things complicated.
Yeah, it's not like a set number. I don't know. It's more like a it's a guideline, you know, like the laws.
And I guess it depends on what type of off-roading you're doing, too. That yeah, there's a lot to think about.
Yeah, and how heavy your vehicle is, and if you ever plan on towing with it. Like, I actually think I'd prefer load range E tires on our truck. Our truck isn't heavy enough to warrant them, but I really like the stability they give you aired down. So I think on ours, like, I actually prefer a load range E aired down to, like, 5 PSI versus a load range C ran at, like, 14 or 15 PSI. Because I feel like you get the same amount of footprint, but you don't get that weeble wobbly of the sidewall flex as much. So right now with the Toyos, when we air it down, it's super weeble wobbly.
Yeah.
And you can, like, you can pretty much just push the truck around side to side, and it's all sidewall flex, which is great for the rocks.
Yeah.
But then it's shitty over whoops and stuff.
Right.
Or trying to make corners, things like that. I've also, I mean, I've blown the bead off our beadlocks before too, so.
Yeah, I also feel like for what we want, there are fewer companies that sell what we want, so we have limited options.
Yeah.
And then also when you factor in that some companies have complete meltdowns and then you don't want to support them. Like, limits it, huh?
I don't know. That's like my favorite thing to happen on the internet this year, which is saying something.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah, what a year. So I think our ideal tire would be like a 42-inch half all terrain, half mud mm-hmm. terrain, load range E.
Right.
For a 17 inch rim.
So we're building our truck now, thinking ahead, knowing we'll probably go to 42s.
Yeah, so everything's clearance for 42s, which is good. I'm going to make the mm-hmm. swing up clearance for 42s as well.
Whoa.
Oh, no, thinking ahead. One of our race lines is bent, and we've been trying to replace it, and they had this sale like last weekend, and I was like, screw it. We'll buy a new one to replace the bent one, because honestly, we really shouldn't be driving on the road with it. It is like unbalanceable at this point,
mm-hmm.
Which is funny, because that is not one of the wheels that had the unbalanceable gladiators on it, ironically enough. That was a whole separate thing. But anyways, I forgot what I was saying. Oh, I was going to get a wheel, swap it with the bent one, and then put the bent one on as a spare. But apparently our race lines are discontinued. They don't make them anymore.
Dang.
Right, why they were cheap on Craigslist. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, so you have to think about the four wheels that you use plus the spare.
Yeah.
And you have never had a matching spare.
Never. In my entire right? life, no. I haven't had a matching wheel or tire.
Yeah.
Neither. It's always been a different wheel and tire for my entire life. Because mm-hmm. I've never been someone who could afford a matching spare.
They're so expensive.
They're crazy, dude. The Toyos, if we were going to buy a new set and mm-hmm. not get them on a crazy good deal on Craigslist.
That came with a shitty Jeep.
Yeah, whatever. But
yeah.
They're $450 a piece, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's you're spending $2,000 on four tires. That's more than every car I've ever owned cost on tires. What?
Well, yeah, maybe when you initially buy them. This tire or this truck is more than a couple grand.
I said car.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. And this truck is hard to quantify too, because a majority of it is time. It's like, I mean, the individual parts are pretty worthless mm-hmm. at this point, but the amount of like time that we've dumped into it is insane.
Time and money.
Yeah. It's crazy how like little things like gas fittings will add up at the end. Like,
I know,
do you remember we had everything done and we were like, all right, we just got to run a gas line to a fuel pump
mm-hmm.
and then that's it. And it was like $500 in between the fuel pump, the fittings, the AN line.
Mm-hmm.
Like what? Each of those like, fittings is 15
just
bucks.
Just like replacing hardware.
Yeah. You know? That too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spending like 50 bucks on bolts randomly.
I know.
Just like, oh, I have to redo all these. And then they're like,
mm-hmm.
every time I take the lower links off, I put new bolts on them too. Mm-hmm. Because I don't really trust them. I don't know. We use all 5/8 hardware for our links though, so it should be fine. If you look, the like sheer strength of a 5/8 bolt's like 100,000 pounds or something
mm-hmm.
crazy. But
mm-hmm.
I still don't trust it stretching out over time. But also I only use fine thread, full shank bolts. I don't use any coarse thread on suspension at all because they're not as strong. So put that in the old brainsicle and suck on it. So, all right. How do you feel about onboard air versus CO2?
Well, the idea of onboard air is great, right? You never have to fill the CO2 tank. You just have it.
Yeah.
But it's got to work.
Yeah. Oh, God, dude. Our air, everything we have on the truck from ARB is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
That compressor keeps blowing fuses anytime it gets too hot. And then I feel like we've had some other issues with it, too. But I don't know what they are.
Well, do you remember what's faster?
CO2 by far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, so it's slower. It doesn't always work. But if it did work every time, it'd be great.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the CO2 is that you run out.
Right,
and then
exactly,
you have to go to air gas. They're only open 9 to 5, and you have to swap the tank. So it's like, that was my big issue, is how many times were we going to leave for a trip? And I was like, shit, we're out of CO2. Because if you're airing a 40-inch tire down to 5 PSI and then airing it back up, and we usually do that, our weekends aren't just like we air down once and go. It's like we air down, we drive, we're back on the freeway at full pressure. And then we hit dirt again, and then, you know, so it's usually we air up and down like once or twice. And I was going to air gas, like, I mean, I already go to air gas once a month, so I was only going like an extra one time per month, but still.
But there were a few trips where we were like, wait, did we fill the CO2 tank?
Yeah.
is it Friday or Saturday? Is it open? What are we going to do? And then we've even messaged people on like Facebook just asking like, hey, we're last minute going on a trip and we don't have CO2.
Yeah. Remember that guy who ran that meme page had to give us his CO2 tank?
Yep.
For the Rubicon. I was like, God damn it. This is embarrassing.
Right. Yeah. So that was a pain in the ass. So onboard air would be nice for that. And, you know, CO2, when you're buying it, I mean, how much are we spending every time
it's
we sell it?
It's not cheap, dude. It's like 30 or 40 bucks to swap the tank out. And I do, we have a customer-owned CO2 tank. So you just bring it to Airgas and they just hand you a new tank that's full. The problem with having a tank that you own is then you have to wait for them to fill it. And then sometimes they, like, don't have time or it takes a little bit to fill it.
Right.
It seems kind of a pain. It's like a welding bottle. I hand them the empty one and they hand me a full one. Mm-hmm. I give them money.
And then also finding a spot in the truck to like...
to mount it. Yeah. And then all the mounts I got were shit. I got these like NATO fire extinguisher mounts that were technically the same size. They don't work. Mm-hmm. Actually, Power Tank, who has like a whole CO2 tank set up, they have a really nice mount for them that I should have just got instead of the NATO fire tank ones. But on eBay for like 60 bucks, you can get a tank mount that almost fits. Mm-hmm. So...
womp womp. Well, the whole idea, we got the onboard air, we got the air locker. It was like all going to be together and
they both aren't good.
Perfect. And they both suck.
The air locker leaks internally at the bonded seal and then the compressor blows fuses. That's really the main issue with the compressor is that it blows that second fuse once it gets hot, which is annoying.
Right.
And then I'll just run on a single for a while and you're like, oh, it took it a long time. And then like three trips later, I'll finally pull out a multimeter and be like, no wonder we've been airing up on a single compressor. I thought it was taking a minute, but it does, dude. It takes a long time to air up 40s from 5 to like 35 PSI. It's a huge volume of air.
I mean, with that being said, we're still going to run onboard air, right?
Yeah, just because I'm not responsible enough to fill CO2. And as long as we have the air locker, because they leak so much, it's like, what are you going to do? If you hook it up to your CO2 tank, you're going to end up using all of your pressure for the locker. You know what's interesting about CO2 is your CO2 tank will like pretty much always read 800 PSI because CO2, when it's pressurized, actually liquefies. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer gaseous. And it liquefies at like around 800 PSI, but as the volume of the chamber changes, it's still in liquid form. So you're changing like the volume of it, but not the pressure. So they have some that'll have like a gauge on the tank. And that's only really useful for when you're like literally about to run out. But the only accurate way to determine the volume in the tank is by weighing it on a scale. Like if you hook up a pressure gauge, it'll be like 800 PSI and you'll be like sick. And then you'll get through two tires and it'll be out.
Right.
Yeah. Or it could be full. You just don't know. So that's one of the interesting things about CO2. CO2 is good though. It's an inert gas. So it's not like flammable or nothing. And what else? You can use a CO2 tank as shielding gas for welding on the trail. I've done that before. And it makes it burn a little hotter, which is better. And then you can use dual shield wire, which is like flux core and CO2. They use it to build like skyscrapers and shit. It works really good, dude.
Really?
Yeah, it's like flux core that you use shielding gas with.
Huh.
We'll have to try it one time.
I know.
And compare it. It burns a little hotter, dude. It's way better. And there's like way less spatter. There's still a bunch because of CO2, but compared to flux core, it's like fucking almost
it's
none.
Really difficult. Yeah.
Flux core is annoying. But what tire pressures do we run airing down? I put this here. It totally depends what we're doing.
Okay, so when we first hit dirt, we're like, I don't know, like 12, 13.
Yeah.
Maybe 15.
Well, with the load range Cs, I only like to go down that far because they get so squishy. And also, we're at the point where our suspension is so good that we don't, like, really have to air down as much.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a point at which we're airing down and we're losing speed. Because you're losing some of that, like, fucking roundness and boinginess of the tire. You know what I mean? It's, like, it's not as, like, tire-y. You're losing some of the tire-iness of the tire.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but, you said, it also depends on where you are, like, the situation. Like, we've run it at literally zero in the snow. Yeah.
We've pulled valve stems before in the snow and we were almost stuck.
Or how about in San Hollow when we were stuck in the sand.
Oh, yeah. We're at like an 18 PSI stuck helplessly in the sand next to a cliff.
I was like, we're going to die.
I'm like, why don't we just air down to like 5?
I know. And we never did that. Like,
yeah.
It just didn't occur to us.
And our stupid Airbnb was like 5 miles from there. That's the other thing is some people are like super anal about airing up when you hit the road. I've driven home from Ocotillo Wells at 10 PSI like a couple times because I didn't have a compressor. And it's fine. It's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just shitty for your tires, and it sucks to drive.
Oftentimes, you can like hit the highway long enough to get to a gas station and then fill up.
We used to just use gas stations too.
The annoying part is constantly going back in and telling them to turn it back on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that annoying?
Which is usually my job.
Yeah. There's a couple gas stations up and down the 395 that have like mechanic shops attached to them.
Yes.
And the air pump outside is actually like the shop pump, mm-hmm. and it airs up so fast. Like it blows CO2 out of the water. Like the Chevron in Big Pine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
One of them. There's like that's the one we would always go to. It's so fast, dude. It's like 30 seconds.
I remember seeing that guy pull up in like a Prius and it like took like 2 seconds.
Yeah, he was like
all four tires. Yeah.
Done. That was crazy. That's an awesome spot stop. Mm-hmm. We'll stop and do that too, even with the onboard air because it sucks so bad.
Yeah, that's true.
Super annoying. I hate it. That's all I really got to say about airing down. Well, so the pressures change too. Also, if we're going to be like off-roading and then on the freeway and then off-roading and then on the freeway, and we know that, we'll only go down to like 20.
That's true.
But also, the suspension is really good in the truck. So some of the advantages that you get from airing down aren't as big for us anymore.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Because it just like, it just soaks it up. Although it's tuned for tires that are aired down. So some of the like low velocity inputs that an aired down tire would roll right over, it's not necessarily set up to like handle them.
A couple recent trips that we've been on, we've had that weird issue where, so we balance our tires with BBs, airsoft BBs, and remember the BBs get stuck in the...
Oh, in the valve stem, The valve stem is like pointing up. As you let the air out, a BB will get stuck in it and you won't be able to air down, and you got to like find a stick to shove in the like where the Schrader valve used to be.
Or like you go to air up instead and shoot air in. And
yeah, that's what I've done, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll turn the compressor on for a sec. I'll shoot some air in so it gets out. That's weird. It's literally never happened my entire life until recently.
Like 2 or 3 times. I know. Lately,
I think I'm just a shitty person and that's karma. So that's my guess. All right. Oh, I got a good one on how we get unstuck. So when I was a kid, we used to just bring around 2x4s everywhere in the back of the truck. Yeah, and we got stuck.
Still carry those. Yeah, we still do. In case.
Yeah. Although I will admit the maxi tracks are great, but they're essentially just 2x4s pretty much. Like 2x4s and floor mats, and you just shove them under the tires and don't spin too much. But yeah, also if you're stuck, you can air down to like 4 or 5 and try and creep your way out. What I do is I'll like rock back and forth and I'll get going forward and you can feel it. You're going forward and then all of a sudden you're going down instead of forward. And you have to stop right there and then pop it immediately in reverse and go backwards and then stop when you start going down instead of backwards. And as long as you have any movement at all back and forth, you're not stuck yet. You got to just rock it back and forth.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you break the Dana 60 and then you are stuck.
Well, also, like, there's all sorts of different ways you can get stuck. If you're stuck in sand versus snow versus mud.
Or rocks.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different things at play there. But for the most part, that is what we did. Remember when we got stuck in the bowl, which we've talked about?
On the drive back and forth, dude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or in the same, or in the snow, we just shovel a lot. That's another thing. You should bring a shovel.
Oh, yeah. Just like a cheap little like Home Depot shovel works mint. Mm-hmm. We had a shovel, but we replaced it. Now we bring like an e-tool pretty much, which we use to poop with too. Also bring toilet paper. That's a good one. Always bring toilet paper and a shovel because if you surface shit, you're pretty much, a giant piece of shit. That's part of the reason why people hate off-roaders.
Yep.
It's all the surface shitting. And also, so if a truck has open diffs, what you can do is just hold the brakes a little bit and you'll have enough pressure that sometimes it'll let both the tires spin. Although it doesn't always work that great. It'll also work if you have a limited slip, because the way a limited slip works is that it biases the amount of traction each tire is getting. And usually there's clutches in the middle. There's actually a Torsen limited slip, which uses these crazy like helical gears. It's a fully mechanical limited slip. But even that, if you have one tire in the air, there's nothing to slip against. And so all of the power will go to the tire in the air. Mm. So that's the big problem with limited slips. They're great for like sand and stuff, though, because you'll still get like whatever 30% of the power to the inside tire.
Okay.
And you're less likely to get stuck. But I don't know. I think a majority of people with like race trucks and shit, like pre-runners, will just run a spool. But that's because it's for purely racing. So it just makes sense.
Do you remember when we were stuck on the Rubicon? It was like Little Sluice or whichever one that we went up that most people go down. Do you remember? And we were stuck on that big boulder and the diff was hung up on it. Like, yeah, so that's an big entirely old different sluice. Thing. Aren't those two different things?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I was going to say Crowbar.
Oh, yeah. Well, Crowbar works, man. That's not really something I would say people should bring, though.
Why?
It was just that one time.
What? Totally you always random. Bring it.
Yeah, but that's for, like, working on the truck with. Not really. Okay. So, another one is, how do you find a good four-wheel drive shop? And one of the main things, it's really hard for, like, you off the street, not knowing anything, to actually find one that's reputable. But I think reviews are good. Like, you can go on Yelp and stuff if the business is actually legit enough to be on Yelp. And then one of the things you can do is scroll through their Instagram and see, like, what kinds of projects they do. I don't usually take pictures of, like, customer trucks that we build. But, and you don't want to see any tack welding where they just do the little fish eyes. Because they can't actually, they're, like, not good enough to do a real weld. So I hate tack welding. It pisses me off so much. It's gross. You want, like, literally, if you show up with a cage that's tack welded, the dude at tech will be like, all right, get the fuck out. you can't race with that. It's going to break and kill somebody. So, yeah. Also, when you're in the market for bumpers and skid plates, I've already said that I think aluminum skid plates on the underbelly are dumb. And I'm also building an aluminum skid plate for us. So just keep that in mind anytime I say anything. Just don't listen to me. But a lot of the bumpers look the same, man. Like all the hybrid bumpers for Tacomas, you literally, if you line them up next to each other in photos, you can't tell the difference. And one guy was trying to tell me you can, and I sent him like three photos, and he was like, yeah, see, those are all different, but they were all of the same bumper. I was like, awkward. Oh, but yeah, a lot of them, they just look the same. And the problem with the new trucks is that when you take the bumper and the panels off, there's a bunch of like weird shaped panels that they're hiding because they've changed the way they make vehicles now. And so there's a bunch of like, everything's made in these giant dies that they like press together, and everything has these like weird shapes under it and stuff because it's easier to assemble, easier to manufacture. And so it's harder to do just like a normal tube bumper and hide all the junk that's sitting under the stock bumper. So a lot of them are like plate steel bumpers, which are great. It's more important than anything is how they attach to the frame. I've seen a bunch of like bumpers ripped off the front of trucks because they just attach with like four bolts in the front, which is junk. They need to attach in like multiple planes, like on top and bottom or on the sides or something. And yeah.
Well, also, one of the things that you should probably first do on your truck to go anywhere is sliders.
Oh, yeah. Like, before anything.
Right. Yeah. And then they have a lot of those sliders that are, like, bolt-on. What do you think about those?
They're good and bad. They're good because if you're welding to the frame of a truck, I believe technically you've totaled the vehicle. So, like, if you have a new truck or if you're a hardcore overlander and you have a lease, it doesn't make any sense to weld sliders to it. Or, like, if your truck is new and at any point you might want to, like, sell it or turn it back into the dealer or something, you want to be able to unbolt all the stuff you did to it and put it back to stock. I don't know. So, they're good and bad.
Yeah.
And some people say they're not as strong, but really, if you look, they're held on with like 20 freaking grade 8 bolts. And as long as they're, it's not just like a flat plate and it wraps around the bottom of the frame like a bunch mm-hmm. of them do, I think they're pretty freaking strong, man.
Okay.
I don't know. I think they're good, but I wouldn't run them on like any, like a rock crawler.
Yeah.
Just weld them on. It'll be probably stronger, definitely lighter for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I've heard of some of the bolted on ones. They have an issue with flexing, and I think that's just how they're designed. There's not enough gusseting and stuff. And so some people try and fix the flexing by using like thicker outer tubes, which I've never really done personally. All the sliders I've ever made. And also, like, custom sliders aren't really that good. They're not, like, better than the prefabricated ones that they make hundreds of, and they have a jig, and everything fits perfect and all that stuff. So mm-hmm. if, like, you do have a random vehicle, like, let's say an FJ80, they have those weird catalytic converters on the outside of the frame, and you have to, like, bend a special tube for the front of them.
Oh, yeah.
You're better off just getting, like, a set of the Trail Gear Universal sliders. Dude, they're, like, $250, and they come, like, pre-bent
mm-hmm.
with the feet, and then you just pay someone to weld them on. And I think I usually charge, like, a little bit over $100 a side, depending on how much prep work it needs.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I got to add more tubes on or something.
I know. I think I've welded those on before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fine. I mean, they're made by robots in Korea or something. And they're so cheap. You can't beat it.
Mm-hmm.
Super hard to beat it. But yeah, so the bolt-on ones are good, but they have their place for sure.
Right, right, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. And a lot of them look the same too. And people will get into arguments on forums about like how much rake your sliders should have and if they should have a kick out or not.
Mm-hmm.
And really, I don't think any of it actually fucking matters at all.
Yeah.
I think, like, people just are, no. People got opinions about stuff they don't have a lot of experience in, but
mm-hmm.
seeing a bunch of different sliders, and I'm like, oh, they're pretty much all the same shit. 15-degree mm-hmm. rake, 0-degree rake, as long as the door doesn't hit them when you open up. I do like kickouts.
Yeah.
Because it kind of, like, I don't know, kicks
push
you out.
Off of things. Yeah.
Our new setup has, like, a kickout, but it also transitions into, like, our fender, so we have, like, a weird
thing. We're just making it work together. But if we didn't have that, we were going to do a kickout.
Yeah.
Also, if you have a dog.
Yeah.
Phil played it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so worried about poor Moose jumping out of the truck and getting his leg stuck on the slider, because he's not an athlete.
No, but even, like, it's happened with a lot of dogs. Like,
yeah,
they'll get their paws
scary,
stuck
man.
In it. And yeah,
I know. I want to make, like, a fill plate kit for mm-hmm. the Trail Gear sliders or something.
Yeah.
Because it's a pain in the ass to sit there and cut out all those things the right shape.
I know.
It sucks. But if I drew up a file, I could just cut out, like, 100 at a time and sell them for dirt cheap. And then other people could weld them in if they want. Make those cool. They got those, like, they're like these dimpled eyes, but you cut almost like a star shape on the plasma table and then dimple them, and it makes like a little traction circle thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually, there are some maxi tracks that are like aluminum boards, and they're kind of like sand ladders, which is, I think, what originally the maxis were before they turned them into like the plastic things.
Mm-hmm.
And those they use like it's like a star looking thing that they dimple dye.
Punch through, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then it makes this cool like tread pattern. So I have the file for that too. I should maybe build some of those once we get our lives together. So another thing I see people doing is they gotta have the high lifts, but then they ain't got no sliders or bumpers. And I'm like, where are you gonna put the fucking high lift to? A.
Oh my God.
And B, the stock jack is so much safer than the high lift.
High lifts are freaking
scary. They're so
bad.
I saw a dude crack his mandible in half. His jaw shattered in half from a high lift. He had to be air-evac'd off the trail.
What?
Yeah, and another dude, I saw a truck fall on him. I seen a couple
things. We've been in some sketchy situations.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I had my head in the fender when it fell.
Yeah.
When it was, like, super sharp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have done that.
Well, I was working in there.
Okay.
We shouldn't have used the high lift.
No, this is the worst. But the majority of the times, you're just changing the tires, and the stock jack is actually fine, even with oversized tires, because you just put it under the axle or under the A-arm, and it's okay.
Right, yeah.
And then if you're in sand, if you've already got a 2x4 that you use to get unstuck, you put the 2x4 under the stock scissor jack and use that. Mm-hmm. Although they won't really go to the frame. So if you can't, like, get to the axle, you're totally boned.
Hmm.
But I don't know. If you can't get to the axle, then just drive somewhere else. It's just a flat tire. You can drive home. Like, you can drive 50, 100 miles mm-hmm. flat tire. You'd be all right. Like, I've seen some people, like, leave their trucks on the trail, like, mm-hmm. in Death Valley, to go and get another tire. I'm like, what? You would not catch me do that.
Yeah.
I would drive all the way out on the rim. I don't give a fuck. Even though apparently our wheels are discontinued and you can't buy them anymore.
Do you remember the last time we went to Acadia Wells? And the guy, like, blew his tire and couldn't find our camp after we had just pulled Trevor out?
No? Who?
He had the Jeep.
Oh, yeah. And he was just driving around on three rims for, like, an hour? Yeah. Or on three tires for, like, an
yeah,
hour?
Yeah.
Yeah, sketchy. So, I don't know. The stock jack works pretty good, that little scissor jack. You can get a scissor jack from, an RV or a trailer at the junkyard. They're usually, like, $15, and they go super tall. One of the leveling jacks for a trailer. They work good, or you can get a Humvee jack. Mm-hmm. Online for like $80 maybe on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more expensive than getting one at the junkyard, but then you don't have to go to the junkyard and take it off yourself.
Yeah.
So you probably save that $30 right there.
What about like just like a bottle jack or?
Oh, like, those work mint. There's this company that makes like bottle jack extensions too, which I think are pretty good. I think they're called like Safe Jack or something. I thought about getting one of those, but I don't know. We have like a Harbor Freight 1.5-ton aluminum jack that we just welded like a piece of drive shaft too. We just use that. It's we call it the Poor Eagle.
Yeah. I mean, Pro Eagle looks nice too.
It works great. You remember we used Tom's?
Yeah.
It works really good. We just, I don't know. We can't afford one. So it is what it is. Different kinds of lockers.
Yeah, you kind of talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, with the Torsen and limited slip. So yeah, the main problem with limited slip is that it biases power. And if there's nothing to bias it against, then the tire in the air will just spin.
Right.
You can have a mechanical locker, and they call it like a ratchet locker, or some people will call it a lunchbox locker, even though a lunchbox locker just means that it only replaces the spider gears, and it's not a full carrier like a Detroit. It's like a Spartan mix one. You just take the spider gears out and you put it in place. And it has like a bunch of teeth and some springs, and it ratchets. So what it does is, in a turn, your outside tire needs to spin faster than your inside tire does. And what it'll do is, based on your throttle input, let's say you're giving it X amount of throttle input, both tires will at minimum spin X amount, but it will unlock and let the outer tire spin more. But it won't let anything spin less. So that's how that works, and it's pretty good on the street. I don't know, I daily drove trucks with mechanical lockers for like a decade, so it doesn't bother me. But they can like buck, and if you have uneven tire pressures, they can really jack you up. And in the rain, they can like spin you out and stuff if you aren't careful. But that's like pretty rare.
Okay.
Not a big deal. We might go back to one, dude. I don't know. I'm so over the over Airbnb this? Issue.
Yeah.
But it is nice to be able to drive around with an open diff. The turning radius is really good. It's comfortable on the road. I don't know.
I know.
But if it doesn't work, then there's no point. I'd rather have a spool.
What about like getting like an e-locker? What do you
That's
think
That's ideal.
That?
Yeah. The Toyota OEM e-lockers are great. I've only seen a couple of them broken, and they were all like the person's fault. I think they're like one of the most reliable things ever. It's just like a little servo that like pushes a thing over and locks it.
Yeah.
They work really good. So, I don't know. They're pretty easy to retrofit into the older housings as well. So, if you're building, like, a pretty lightweight crawler, or you're only going to go up to, like, 35s, and you can actually survive on an 8-inch diff, then I think it's a good option. They don't make an electric locker for 14 bolts. They do for a 9-inch, though. I think Herrick does.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. Otherwise, I'd get that. And then Aux Locker makes a cable-actuated locker. I might look into that. I think they make it for the 14 bolt, but the cable goes through, let's see, it goes through their diff cover. And our truck is shaved, so we would have to get the front part of the shave, and then I think their diff cover is cast, too. So it might be like a whole thing, welding cast again, and then who knows. Our shave kit seals perfectly. It doesn't leak at all.
I know you don't want to mess with that.
Yeah, which I want to say is because I was super careful with it. I did all the pre and post heat. I peened it. I did all the shit. Cooled it slowly, blah, blah, blah. And then kind of like milled it flat. But it's probably luck more than anything. So,
yeah.
I don't know about that. Are there other kinds of lockers I'm forgetting? I guess that's really the only ones we care about. There's an open diff. You can you can kind of like fake a locker with A-track and stuff like that. All it does is, like I was talking about earlier, where you can kind of like touch the brakes and it'll give it just enough pressure that sometimes the other tire will spin. That's essentially what A-track and like all those crawl control and all that stuff does is it modulates brake pressure to each individual tire. So that it kind of acts like a locker, but none of them are as good as like just a locked truck. So there's, you just can't beat four tires spinning. It's just, it can't be done unless you have six tires spinning. But then when you try and actually go down a trail, you get stuck because you're too big.
Right. When we went to Utah, we started off with a, with no air locker, right? It was just, it didn't always work.
No.
So we probably would have been fine had we had that.
Yeah, and it is nice having it selectable because then you can turn. Although having the welded front diff with the that like crazy grippy rock out there totally sucks. Even with hydraulic assist steering, which doesn't work that good because the pump's blown up.
Right,
And then we never bled it all the way too. So by the time we got home, it was steering like perfect because finally all the air was out of it.
Yeah.
Super annoying. But yeah, so I don't know. I would love to replace the welded front diff. I'm pretty sure they make an electric locker for a Dana 60.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
So I would do that. Yeah. I would do that for sure. It'd be so cool to have like, I don't know, or like open front and rear for like scooting around in the desert, maybe. That'd be sick.
Yeah.
Because then you'd finally have the traction. Because one of the issues we run into is like suspension's good. Engine power sucks balls, but we also just lose traction at a certain point.
Yeah.
So the dirt eats up so much of it. So another thing I want to talk about is first aid. We should bring on a trail. Did I talk about this a little bit in another podcast?
No, we had talked about maybe doing a separate podcast on which I think is super important. And I rely heavily on you knowing all the first aid because of your background, but... It was also important for you to teach me some basics so that if something were to happen to you, you wouldn't just die.
I'll be all right. I haven't died before. Yeah, first aid is pretty important. The number one cause of fatalities off-road is rollovers, which, I mean, duh. That's like a, one of those things I say and everyone's like, well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like people not wearing safety equipment, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Sure, another part they wanted to put in there was alcohol as well.
Yeah.
That's like the three T's of snake bites they used to say. It was teenagers, tequila, and testosterone, which I think is like the same as the three T's of rollovers.
Yeah, I think that's fair considering.
So, yeah, but first aid is so key and... A lot of the kits I see don't have a tourniquet or at worst, or like maybe they just have one tourniquet, which isn't great because if you have an injury to the lower extremity, you want to probably apply two. That was our standard. And the Army is so far behind everything but like emergency trauma management. That's the one thing that the Army is like light years ahead of the civilian world in. It's really weird. And so we changed our protocols to a lower extremity. You get some dang old squirty blood popping out. You put two tourniquets on that bad boy because we had so many dudes with, you know, giant tundra ties and then one tourniquet's around them and they still got squirty blood. And your goal is to stop squirty blood.
Right.
And usually two will do it then. But also there's a bunch of junk tourniquets and there's a bunch of first aid companies that are just selling bullshit. Like there's this one. And they have these like $500 first aid kits in these red Pelican cases. And of course, they handed a bunch out to the overlanders who know nothing about first aid, who are all like, oh, this is great.
And if I have this, I will be fine.
Yeah. And first of all, they don't know how to use any of the stuff in them. Exactly. And they were using like off-brand UK drug names to make it seem more like exclusive and cool. They were using like Maypap instead of whatever it is in America. I think Maypap's ibuprofen. I don't know what it is. Anyways, you should just use their normal drug name so it's simpler. And people know
what it is. Mm-hmm.
And it didn't include a chart that showed like indications and contraindications, like when to actually give the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them didn't include a tourniquet, or one just had like one in it too,
mm-hmm.
which also sucks. Because what if you're in a rollover and some dude's arm and leg gets pinned? Mm-hmm. That's fucking three tourniquets mm-hmm. right there on one dude. And what if there are three passengers in the car?
Yeah. And the other thing is like you said, people don't know how to use it. So like you and I went over what we bring and you showed me how to use a tourniquet on mm-hmm. you and also on myself.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the other thing too, is mm-hmm. what if you're by yourself, and there's different rules for applications for lower extremity and upper extremity too.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to do it. And you'd be amazed. Like I would have dudes who are like pretty well-trained medical providers, and they would still, when push comes to shove, fuck up tourniquet application, which is like the number one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're not fucking dropping an IV. You're not doing a surgical crike. Nothing.
Right.
You're just putting a goddamn piece of rope around someone. You can't do it right.
And see, and those people are trained. So mm-hmm. if like Joe Schmo goes out and takes his first aid kit he's never opened before, of course you're going to like fumble and mess up because you're already stressed because it's a traumatic experience, whatever it is that you need a tourniquet for.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you're doing. So mm-hmm. like you should familiarize yourself with the kit, where it is, what's in it, how to use it, all that.
Like if you're someone who gets like stressed when there's blood, the first thing that happens is you lose all your fine motor skills
mm-hmm.
and like you immediately become the world's biggest dumbass. But also this is like one of my biggest pet peeves is people who are like shilling products that they know nothing about. Like what the fuck do you know about first aid kits, dude? This is an awful first aid kit and it shouldn't be $500. But there's a company that I really like called My Medic.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they make really good kits. Again, they don't pay us or anything.
Right.
But I really like their products.
Yeah.
I think they're great. But they don't advertise to the Overlanders. I don't know why.
Mm.
They should. Okay. They don't have like any kind of like catchy storage system you can put onto your like tactical headliner or anything. So I don't know. I think if they worked on that, they'd be way bigger though, because they're genuinely good. And another thing too is you shouldn't bring medical equipment that you don't know how to use. Some people are like, oh, I bring all this stuff in case anyone else knows how to use it. Like, the number one thing I tell people is do no harm.
Right.
So if you're doing an intervention wrong or you're just kind of like fucking winging it, you might do more harm than good.
Right.
In fact, it's pretty likely you will.
Yeah.
By doing an intervention incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
Any issue will resolve itself with time, no matter what. Either they'll die or they'll get better. So that's what you got to think about is like, no matter what, this issue will resolve itself.
Yeah.
Maybe in death, but also they might be alive at the end of it and might be okay.
Okay.
So that's a good way to not be freaked out.
Okay.
Just the worst that happens is they die and you're responsible and you have to live with it.
That is great. I've already accepted that possible outcome with you, so I'm okay with that.
Okay.
But I also wanted to add, like, know who's with you and what they need. Like, if you know somebody's allergic to bee stings, like,
have an EpiPen.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you have, like, even for your pets, too. Mm-hmm. Like, Moose is prone to eye infections. We bring his eye drops.
He has his own kit.
Things, or, you know, he gets, if he, actually, he doesn't really get nauseous in the truck, but we brought stuff anyway for that. Things like that, you know?
Oh, and also you don't need to give people EpiPens if they're breathing fine. The only, like, real indication for an EpiPen is that they're having respiratory distress and their throat's mm-hmm. closing up, in which case you can give it to them. But an EpiPen is not a long-term treatment. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I got an EpiPen, I'll be all right. It's mm-hmm. like, no, you got an EpiPen, now you got longer to bring your fucking hospital. That's it. And you maybe, like, have them pop a couple Bennies, and then they'll be all right, give them some Benadryls, but then they'll be all sleepy, so maybe then they can't shoot people. So, yeah, just, like, get them out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no sleeping on the battlefield. That's what I always tell them. I say, no, don't do it. You can't nap. Mm-hmm. Non-nap time. Now we shoot. So, anyways, That's pretty much all I gotta say about first aid.
Okay, I think that's
I bring fair. Like a bunch of drugs and stuff. Maybe we'll do one on first aid while I'll talk about a lot of the stuff I bring is like bullshit just to make like your life better. Like Tums and Pepto. And
we use those all the time.
Dude, we have Tums in our like little door thing because we eat like fucking
children.
11-year-olds, yeah.
Tequila. Not tequila.
No. Oh, God.
Beer, wine, coffee.
Yeah. Mainly coffee for me. Yeah, we eat awfully when we're camping. Mm-hmm. Like, so bad.
I know. Like, we'd never eat like that at home.
No, never. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to have a microwave in our truck. On an inverter, so it's gonna be nothing but fucking Hungry Man meals, taquitos,
Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets, those are good.
Yeah.
And Smucker's Uncrustables, we already do that.
Wait, what?
What?
Who the fuck is microwaving Smucker's?
I don't know, I'm just saying that's what we eat.
Okay, alright.
You could, I bet that'd be good though if you microwave them. Maybe defrost them, because they're supposed to be frozen. The problem with Uncrustables is that if you leave them in the fridge too long, they don't taste good anymore because they become like dry. You essentially have to take them like frozen and then defrost them, like just by leaving them out and then eat them. It's the only way they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see they have a bunch of weird flavors of Uncrustables when we were at Target last? Which I guess Target shut down now because of all the riots. Yeah, but they had like taco flavor Uncrustables. It had like taco seasoning and like fake taco filling.
What?
In an Uncrustable. Yeah, and there was another one. I don't
know how I feel about that.
I know.
What? Wait, what is the bread?
It's bread.
It's just regular
bread. I think it's just regular bread. Yeah, but they like probably dye it brown though. I don't know.
What?
It's probably the same exact assembly line. It's just one, they got peanut butter and jelly squirts in it. And the other one, they got like fucking just like flavored crap that goes in it.
There is a line.
Yeah. And we all ought to be aware of it.
Or, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Which we don't obviously
know. Yeah, I was going to say, babe. You're the fucking pot calling the kettle glass houses or whatever right now. So, we also bring toe straps, too. We did get a kinetic strap from... Fuck, I don't remember what company. We got one that is way too big, dude. Mm-hmm. Thing, it was like 1.25 inches around. Or something crazy.
Rope or something?
Yeah, it was way too big, dude. But it was rated enough to tow out our friend's RV. And I was like, oh, that's good. But it's just...
It took so up big. Too much space. Like, it filled the bottom part of one of our toolboxes.
Yeah, like, the entire bottom part of it.
Right, you
it
had to, ridiculous. Like, shove it in.
Yeah, it was so dumb. I think next we need to get down. A small... Well, we should get a 7/8 one. That's, like, the normal one people get. But they're great because they stretch.
Yeah.
And it's not just, like, a hard hit. Like, when I first started off-roading, I brought chain and a bolt, and I would wrap the chain around someone's bumper, and I would put a bolt through it with two fender washers.
Oh my God.
And then I would wrap the chain around, like, my frame or axle or something. And we would, like, we wouldn't do, like, a slow yank. I would, like, get some speed. It hurts my back
to think about it.
Yeah, and also, you can, like, for sure die doing that. But we didn't fucking know any better, and we couldn't afford a tow rope. I literally, there was that Baja Bug I built most of that with a crescent wrench because I couldn't afford any tools besides a crescent wrench. So, like, I rebuilt, like, the top part of the engine entirely with one crescent wrench. Because and, like, a Phillips head and a flathead because I didn't have any other tools. That was it. That's all I had. So, I don't know. But there's a bunch of cool new, like, toe strap things. Yeah. And I feel like the safety stuff is more common. Like, now we have, like, a synthetic winch line. And we got a bunch of, like, soft shackles and D-rings. We used to, like, when I stepped up from the chain, I went to a yellow strap with giant hooks on either end. And I was like, fuck, this is so safe now. And then, like, 2 years later, someone was like, you know those hooks will break off and, like, shoot off and kill you, right? And I was like, motherfucker, you guys told me that about the chains. Why don't you get your fucking story straight, bud? If it's not one thing, it's the other. What kind of fake news is this? Mm. But that's evolution. And now I'm like, oh, what about our used D-rings and straps? I got, like, we have that tree saver that's rated for 40,000 pounds. We pretty much use that as a toe strap, which isn't really right, but it works fine.
I mean, whatever does the trick.
You know? We're never, like, really too stuck, too, though.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's a good thing it's a podcast. People can't see your facial expression. All right. Let's talk about something really important What do lift kits actually do?
Oh, I think God.
People think that if you lift your truck 3 inches, you get 3 more inches of travel. Not true. You have the same amount of travel. The only thing you're changing is the amount of bump to droop you have. So you maybe went from 4 inches of bump and 3 inches of droop to 7 inches of bump and 0 inches of droop if you're at Overland Expo trying to be a hot boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you set up your suspension.
Okay.
But it doesn't actually ride any better because you don't have any droop. So when you're going like on the 405 and there's a pothole, your tire can't droop out into the pothole and then come back up and absorb it. Instead, your entire chassis falls into the pothole because you don't have any more droop, and then it's a bouncy, rough ride. And you're like, oh shit, I spent fucking $5,000 to lift my truck 3 inches, now it rides like shit. Right. Except you probably don't, because the stock version rides so bad that they can get away with pretty much whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you're, like literally you put any aftermarket suspension on, you're like, fuck, it's so much better. As long as it's not like some Ranchos. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've had some good Ranchos over the years. So, whatever. Them shocks are like $40. You can't go wrong. With the red boots. That's the ones when people have like 30 shocks on their truck. That's what they'd run.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they'd run like super light valving in them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so lifting your truck does not give you more travel. Unless you're in long travel or mid-travel technically. Although a lot of mid-travel kits are bullshit and don't actually work. And if you like actually have everything on and all the bolts are tight, you don't actually get any more travel. Or you're getting rid of the jounce stop and it actually rides worse than a stock travel truck would.
Right, right.
So.
I feel like people are just associating lift
with travel.
All sorts of parts of the suspension and travel.
Yeah.
And they think that's really not anything to do with it.
And they think like lifting it changes the geometry. So that's why so many people believe that like lifting your truck will allow you to fit bigger tires.
Mm-hmm.
Even though like if you take your truck that's stock and you put bigger tires on it and they rub, but you put a floor jack under it and pump it up a couple times and they don't rub anymore, like, congratulations, you've lifted your truck. Now, when you lower that floor jack, guess what? It fucking rubs again. So what's happening is you've lifted your truck to the point where you have no droop, and now you have no up travel too, because it rubs at stock height. So anytime your tire goes up that 3 inches, it's going to rub. So you've turned your truck with 7 inches of travel into a truck with 0 inches of droop, and then you've turned it into a truck with 4 inches of up travel. And also the Thergent Tacoma and stock orientation, if you jump it, you'll rip out the fender wells and you'll bend the frame. But whatever. That's just my little sidebar.
Yeah. Moving on. So I wanted to ask you, like, when you first started off-roading, what were some of the mistakes that you made?
Oh, well, there was my biggest mistake, which was taking my carburetor off to clean it, taking the carburetor gasket off, throwing it in the trash, and then putting the carburetor back on. And then that Baja Bug didn't idle a single day I owned it, so I drove with all three pedals when I stopped. You had to do clutch, brake, and gas, and kind of like feather the gas to keep it going on a stoplight. Pretty fucking stupid. So I fucked that up pretty bad. What else? That thing was awful. It had manual steering, too. It wasn't good. Oh, I think I've already talked about how bad that thing was. I had one header that was JB welded on that I tried to weld on, but the case is like actually magnesium. So if I had actually kind of welded it, it probably would have just burned to the fucking ground because magnesium is like super flammable, which is funny because they make engines out of it, but it's the whole thing. It's like mainly the shavings are, I think. And then you can't put it out with the fire extinguisher. You have to put it out with sand. If you put it out with fire extinguisher, it's like, yes, I love this. Oh my Give God. Me more. I made a bunch of mistakes, dude. I fucking crashed that thing. That's what I mean.
But not even the first time, like, you went. Like, when you went with, like, what was your first experience off-roading?
Probably riding quads in the desert with Michael's family. Oh, but okay. I didn't even know about airing down then, too. I didn't air down for, like, my first 2 years.
Jesus.
Frank kept telling me to do it, and I was like, well, I don't fucking know about that. I don't think he knows what he's talking about. Meanwhile, it's like literally the most important thing you could ever do ever off-roading is just airing down at the beginning of a trail. That's it. It's like literally
not that hard.
When you air down, your tires become a greater part of your suspension and you can gain like another couple inches of travel aired down. So if you take like a long travel truck at full tire pressure and a stock truck that's at like 12 PSI, the stock truck will probably ride better, is my guess. Depending, I mean, of course, on like a million things. But it's so important, dude. It's so important. But yeah, I fucked up everything. I didn't bring the right stuff. We got stuck all the time and yanked each other out with chain.
Yeah, I guess all of these podcasts is kind of an accumulation of all of your podcasts.
Yeah, people always like, I don't know. Like, I don't assume that anyone is born with any knowledge. So some people are like, hey, I know this might be a dumb question, but I'm like, no, dude, I don't always know any of this stuff. And I still learn so much every single day. I learn shit about fabricating every single day, even just on my own, not from anybody. I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, this didn't work right. And then I'll like mess with it and I'll be like, whoa, that's a little nugget put away in the old brain skull to suck on later. So
the first time you took me off-roading was through the squeeze. And I remember because we were a little bit stuck in the squeeze. And you had told me before we left, we're breaking all of my rules. Never go alone.
Yes.
And never go at night.
Yep. Don't off-road at night and don't go alone. Those are my two rules. And don't forget to bring a towel. You want to get high? Yeah, dude. And we didn't have lower TK gears. That's the other thing is like, I would not off-road without lower TK gears. It's just not fun.
I was going to say that. Like, it just doesn't look fun.
No,
why bother?
Yeah, especially like with the 538s, I think we're just under stock gearing too. So that just shows you like how hard it is to off-road with stock TK gears. It's so hard. But we went from, they list the Tacoma chain case at a 2.57 reduction, but I actually pulled the planetaries apart and I put them in a planetary calculator because I'm a giant fucking nerd.
Oh my God.
And it measured out to 2.61. So I would just like to say that everybody is wrong and it's actually a 2.61 reduction. So we have a 2.61 in the rear case and then we have 2.28 in the front case. And it's supposed to be like 5.4 or 5 or 6. I can't do the math. I can't stay in wheeling with a stock T case because everything happens too fast and you can't just like creep and make decisions while you're wheeling.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, definitely.
I always really liked in my 79, I had a 2.28 in front of a 470, which gave you like a 10-to-1 final ratio, which is like way too slow. But when you have like no suspension and you're just like leaf springs, or you have like an IFS truck, it might be good for that because everything is so bouncy in the rocks because you got like 7 inches of travel. So I think it'd be way better for that. But right now it's like we have whatever 5-to-1. And I think once we do the supercharged V8 and the auto, I'll probably try and get an Atlas on eBay. That's like the same amount. We should have gotten an Atlas 3 years ago.
From the beginning.
And then we would be ahead, actually. We would have more money right now.
I know.
How stupid is that? Fuck, we should have just done it. But then, of course, it would have been the wrong Atlas for the V8. Because it would need a different input, so.
Yeah.
See, I knew it all along. I don't know.
So, two things I was going to say was that you should know the right trail to take for your vehicle and your skills, and when you build and work on your own truck, you are more likely to know, like, how to troubleshoot.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword, though, because there's a bunch of stuff that is just cost prohibitive to learn. Like, you can't just, like, one day be like, I'm going to do custom fabrication. It's like, dude, we have, like, 10 grand worth of tools, easy, and I have a decade worth of experience using those tools and fucking up who knows how many thousands of dollars of steel and like welding classes and all that kind of stuff. So what may take me 3 hours to do might take someone else like 40 hours and then it would come out worse too. But there's a lot of like really basic stuff that you should learn how to do, like swap a CV or swap an axle or like troubleshoot small electrical problems. Actually, I wanted to talk to you. I want to do an electrical class at the shop. In addition to the welding classes?
I would love that because it's just sorcery.
I was going to have everyone like wire up a relay with a light.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Explain to them how relays work, mm-hmm. and then maybe show off like our S-Pod, which is essentially just like a bunch of relays in a thing. But mm-hmm. I think we have to get rid of the S-Pod because we need more than 6 switches by far.
We need
10 switches.
I know.
So I don't really see a point in having the S-Pod and then having like 8 relays zip tied on top of it. It's like, right. Why not just
have them
all made out of relays and just have like a relay bank and then mm-hmm. with their own fuses and you can organize it nicely. But mm-hmm. they have more expensive ones that have like touch screens that have more switches, but they're just out of our price range.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So I think, I don't know, I might pull this S-Pod off and try and sell it this week or something. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We were going to be Switch Pros installers at one point, and I hadn't even heard of S-Pod, and then I was on the Corva website, and I saw S-Pod and their Corva business members, and I saw that Switch Pros wasn't, but they did sponsor our favorite guy who gets trails shut down. And I was like, well, so... That's why I ended up with an S-Pod instead of Switch Pros. I literally know nothing about them besides that.
Hmm. See, it matters.
Yeah. It could. I mean, one could be better than the other. I have no idea. Literally none. All I know is the one sponsored that dude, and the other one is a Corva member. So
yeah.
I think that speaks for enough.
Exactly, yeah.
That's how I'm happy that we run our business. We support people who support off-road recreation.
Mm-hmm.
In all ways. Always, that's really important to us. That's why, like, we didn't get a fucking Factor 55 rope or something. Also because we can't afford it. But because Freedom Ropes is a Corva business member.
Yeah.
So it's really important to us.
Yep.
So anytime we're trying to get anything, we go on and get stuff from Corva business members. Like, we buy a lot of Rough Stuff parts.
Mm-hmm.
Even though at one point I was mad at them because they, like, I asked them to stop using our photo. And then 12 hours later, they sent it out in a newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, bro, what the fuck? I was pretty pissed at them about that. But I did say, hey, if you guys are going to keep using our photo, will you at least become Corva business members?
That is literally what you said.
Yeah. And then they got, oh, no. It's dumb, but their stuff is so cheap. You just can't beat it. And it ships. It takes them like 2 or 3 days to ship it. And then you get it within the week.
Yeah.
And it always fits and it always works. We have their trailing arms. They work great. I would run those again. Mm-hmm. It was like $400, dude, for full trailing arms. You just have to weld them. It's so cheap.
Oh my God.
You can't, like, that's the cheapest thing you can ever get in the off-road world.
Yeah,
it's insane. True. And then, I mean, you got to dump $2,000 on shocks after that. But, mm-hmm. you know, you're saving so much money.
Mm-hmm.
The other option for trailing arms were like over $1,000. So, I mean... We're cheap. It's hard, too, because I want to be like, you should only buy Made in America stuff, all this. And then I look at the price tags for some of the stuff, and I'm like...
I know, yeah.
I'm going to go to Harbor Freight. I feel so bad about it, but it's like, we just can't afford it.
Yep.
It's like, do we have the money for it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but we're trying to, like, spend it on other things, like a house. Maybe. We'll see. What about Dorkles? How do you feel about Dorkles?
Well, I've never had one, so...
Yeah, me either. I don't know anything about them. People say they're for dust. I think if that was true, all the Baja racers would have them. I will say I used to think they were dumb until we almost drowned the truck a couple times, and I'm like, fuck, we need a snorkel, dude.
There have been a couple times. Would have come in handy.
Oh, yeah. So,
but with water, not with dust.
Yeah, no, with dust. I don't know about the whole dust thing. They're like, no, it's higher up, so you don't get any of the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like,
yeah.
You ever been in the desert? Because it seems like the dirt's pretty much fucking everywhere to me. Like, you're getting, like, roosted all the time. It may be better than in the fender well, exposed like us. That's, like, the number one bad way to have it. Except that it's maybe actually a cold air intake. Because what's funny is, like, with the Toyotas, they have a cold air intake from the factory, but people will buy cold air intake kits that are actually hot air intakes and then just take air in from the engine bay instead of the stock intake that takes it in from the fender well. And so they've actually shown there a bunch of cold air intake kits for like 22 REs that make it lose power. It's like a $300 mod and you lose 2 horsepower. So that's pretty bad. It's probably just worse overall, but Our new air intake setup, though, we're going to have the air filter on the roof and plumb it to that. So that'd be cool.
Yeah.
One of those big old, like, Donaldson off-road filters.
I mean, also, like, there's not a whole lot of room
under
the hood, and I'm just excited to get that filter out of the way.
I know. I'm kind of thinking about waiting until we do the V8 swap to fix it, though.
Well, I mean, yeah, if we're going to make room in the engine bay, then we might as well think about that.
The LS is not much bigger than the 5VZ, though. If you look at them side by side, they're pretty similar. And mm-hmm. the LS is actually lighter than the 5VZ and makes, like, double to triple the horsepower. And is more fuel efficient and parts more readily available. And that'll be the last Toyota part on our truck gone.
I know.
Which just leaves the cab, which is the part I hate the most.
Wait, the transmission.
We're getting rid of that.
Oh.
We're not going to run the stock transmission behind a 400 horsepower motor. It would blow up. Also, I want an automatic for off-roading and on the freeway. It's so much better, dude. You're just like a you're just a hater.
Lazy.
I'm not just Wait, between the two of us, you're the lazy one.
What?
What?
No one believes that.
I mean, tell the people what you always tell me about your arms.
My arms?
Yeah, tell them about your arms.
These guns?
Yeah, about how you don't like to use them.
Yeah, I really don't like using my arms.
I know, you're so lazy. Or I'll be like, hey, maybe we should do this.
But...
And you'll be like, and just sit there. Anyways, what were you saying?
Nothing. Where are we at on this conversation?
We just passed Dorkles. And now we're at communications.
Communications.
Yes. Like radios and shit.
Oh.
Everybody's like super into these ham radios and stuff.
Okay.
We have never had them.
Wait. We did buy
the Baofengs. Yeah. We used them once.
And I don't even remember if we actually heard somebody on it or even like tried to use it or just like went through the whole trouble of setting it up before we left camp.
Yeah, like programmed
and then,
it and shit.
Yeah. And then like... nothing.
Yeah, I don't really see, like, maybe if you have a big group. I don't like off-roading in a big group.
Exactly.
And we always stop at all intersections.
Yeah, we're not like, leaving anyone behind.
Yeah, I've never left anyone behind with a radio or without one.
Mm-hmm.
And we just stop. Anytime you turn, we stop and wait until every single person is there.
Right.
And make sure everyone's okay.
I mean, even when we went on a solo trip. To like Utah where we weren't sure how much service we had. We didn't
bring We did bring that Wii Boost though.
But we brought a Wii Boost.
Yeah, Chris was nice enough to let us borrow his Wii Boost.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure it does anything because there are a bunch of those towns where you would have like 0 bars and then it would show 3 bars. And I wanted to shoot a video on like how much does the Wii Boost actually work? And it wouldn't even load the like Google page you use to test your internet speed.
Yeah.
I was like, so it was like fake service. So it just showed you had the bars, but you didn't really. It was like being out at Hammers when it would show you had 4G,
but you didn't have
anything.
Yeah.
That's what would happen, and we still wouldn't have any service.
Yeah.
Although we would essentially have full bars everywhere else, but like, it's probably good if you want to like watch a movie or something off 4G, but for us, what are we really using 4G for? I just use it to play music.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do that with one bar. It's like a super low data rate to just transfer audio files over.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. It just didn't really work for us. It looked cool though having that antenna. I felt like super badass. I was like super tactical.
Oh my God.
It was really nice of him to let us borrow it. You know what sucks? I still have it in the truck.
Well, we
can't
see
anybody. I know. We should have just mailed it to him by now though. How rude is that?
I know.
It's super rude.
I think he's working on his stuff too, though. I don't think he's going anywhere.
I know, but still, it's still rude. I hate when,
You
let someone borrow something, and then they never give it back, and now I'm that person. He lives like fucking 10 minutes from here. I need to just drop it off one day. I was supposed to help him flip his trailer, actually. Maybe I'll drop it off and help him flip his trailer.
Flip his trailer?
He's building a new trailer. I gotta help him flip it. Anyways, so the other thing for beginning off-roading is pick up your fucking trash.
Oh, yeah. That's for everyone, not just beginners.
Pick up other people's trash, too.
Yeah.
If you see trash on the trail, just pick it up.
Just pick it up.
And also, not just trash, but think about your impact in places. So there were some really cool spots in the Eastern Sierras and in Death Valley that have been absolutely blown up by YouTube and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily a delicate ecosystem, mm-hmm. but it can't sustain bringing like 20 vehicles through mm-hmm. for an overland photo shoot. And then also if you put a video of that place out and it gets like millions of views and then a bunch of people are going to it, mm-hmm. it's going to get shut down because the entire place gets trashed. Yeah. Even just because there's a bunch of people going to it mm-hmm. now. It could be that every single person who goes to it is super cognizant, packs up all their trash and stuff, but it's just the impact of everyone out there walking mm-hmm. around, driving their truck around, trying to find a spot to camp, and then they're yeah. like pushing out into the meadows little by little by little.
Right.
And what
right.
happens is you might think like, oh, this is the edge. Mm-hmm. So you park your truck kind of like the edge of the meadow, mm-hmm. you're in the dirt, and then you're walking around. What happens is like maybe 6 inches of the plants get crumpled. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, no big deal. They're mm-hmm. fucking plants. Who gives a shit? And then that happens to the next person. And then it's a year later and there's no more meadow and suddenly the entire area is a giant camping area. Mm-hmm. Like I remember up at Coyote Flats, that area by the lake used to be a giant meadow with like mm-hmm. flowers and stuff. And now it's barren mm-hmm. because of the impact of people coming, which sucks. Right. But it also sucks because I'm happy that people are getting outside and seeing these places because mm-hmm. they're so beautiful and I want other people to experience them and not just be looking at their phone, thinking about how shitty everything is all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it makes me happy to see other people outside, and I also hate it.
I know. Yeah, it's tricky. It's, I mean, and it's not just like the actual impact of your vehicle on the area, but yeah. like pay attention to the rules too. Like, wildlife might not ever come back to that area because one, there's so many people, and two, like, you've just ruined the vegetation.
Yeah.
And like that has an impact. Like, it's all like a snowball effect, mm-hmm. you know? Or like if you're like not paying attention to the rules about pets or anything like that.
Yeah. Like, or like off-leash dogs or something yeah. like that. They're mm-hmm. running around through flowers, and then maybe for you it's okay, but the next 100 people do it and then suddenly it's all gone. So it's like a domino right. effect.
Yeah.
And also the reason we have such big tires and air them down is because we have a lighter pound per square inch footprint mm-hmm. and because we're not spinning tires out in these areas because mm-hmm. we're getting stuck all the time out in like delicate ecosystems and stuff. It's mm-hmm. actually more environmentally friendly.
Right.
How do you like that fucking mm-hmm. brain gymnastics yeah. I did there to justify it? What do you think about that? Did it make sense?
Yeah, totally.
I think it kind of does, actually.
I think that it's best if people like continue to educate people on what they know and how to respect the land.
Yeah.
I think that people are so focused on posting where they go and bragging about it. And then they don't like also talk about like, hey, this is where, like, you don't have to say where you're at, but like respect the land. Mm-hmm. Don't tromp the flowers, you know, like park yeah. where you're supposed to, like, just be real about it, you know? Mm-hmm.
And some of this land too, isn't necessarily public land. A lot of Coyote Flats is privately owned.
Yeah.
And that guy, he's threatened to close it down already because of the impact it's having out there, which mm-hmm. sucks. And then also there's another influencer. She took like 20 rigs through someone we know's private ranch, mm-hmm. private cattle ranch. And just drove straight through it. Ignored all the signs, well, everything.
Well, wasn't it because there was some kind of, like, obstacle or something in the trail and they went yeah. around it?
There was, like, mud. Oh, God. So they went around it. Or, like, rocks mm-hmm. in the trail or something. So yeah. they went around it through private property. And it's like, dude, he's like an old rancher guy. He doesn't have I don't even think he has a phone. That's and it's a good thing he didn't see that. Because he'd be on the fucking news.
It's so rude and disrespectful and selfish.
Yeah, it's really bad, dude. It's those people who just can't imagine that other people exist besides them.
Right, yeah.
And just have no interest in, like, helping anyone mm-hmm. else. Mm-hmm. Which is rampant, especially in the off-road community, too.
Yeah,
people just
yeah.
want to, like, get their kicks in at the expense of others, and they don't mm-hmm. care. But yeah. We're getting on our high horse again.
Well, that's what we do.
Yeah, I guess so. This is our thing.
If you're still here listening, then you know that.
Yeah, that's true. Everybody who's here listening probably has already heard this shit.
Yeah.
They made it this far. the last one I had is bring toilet paper. Oh, this is a good one. Get out and walk an obstacle first if you're not sure about it.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good one.
I do that a lot.
All the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
we have this like super built truck and I'm out there like, where am I going to go? Maybe if I go here, might be okay.
Just game plan.
And then
it.
I'm like, all right, Brittany, here's what I'm going to do. Burm, 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 burm. And then,
God, and then you don't do it.
And it's like 5 minutes later and the Dana 60's broke. I'm in three wheel drive. No tires are on the ground anymore.
Yeah, because you didn't do what you said you were going to do. If you did what you said you were going
to
do.
I was looking at you to spot me and you were just looking me in the eyes with just
and
a blank face.
I was telling you, no, that's not it.
God.
Also, have a good spotter.
Yeah, also have a good spotter.
And a good
like,
driver.
Maybe I should bring someone who isn't Brittany to spot me on the Rubicon so that way our drive shaft and Dana's 60 wouldn't break.
What?
What?
The drive shaft wasn't my fault.
You didn't get out to spot.
You were paying attention to the random guy. You should have had me get out and spot you. But you were like, I'm just going to listen to him. And he spotted you wrong.
I should have had you get out. I'll just tell you to. Just be like, but I'm good out right now.
Yeah. Like you always do.
No,
I say, hey,
say
I
that.
Need you to get out. Can you go out and look?
Okay.
Which is what I say all the time. Kick me out when you want me to.
Okay. Well, I will next time, I promise.
Okay.
I'm going to hear about this later. Or maybe right now.
Anyway.
Anyways, what's the next on your list, babe? You got a whole list there.
No, nothing.
Did you go through it all?
Yeah.
You have like three paragraphs. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, shit. I didn't realize it was that long. Mm-hmm. What else do we have to say about beginner off-roading?
I think we've covered it.
Bring a toolkit.
Bring spares.
Yeah. People say bring a tire plug kit. We don't. We won't even bring a spare tire sometimes. Have a AAA membership.
Yeah.
And practice some basic stuff. Like if you have an IFS suspension, just practice swapping a CV. Because they break all the time.
Yeah.
Constantly. Especially if you have a locker in the front, essentially the second it's on, you've broken a CV. Or a stub shaft or something, or grenaded a wheel bearing, something. But yeah, probably like a CV. No, you can just unbolt your rear drive shaft and drive home and four high. And no, to do some like basic stuff. A lot of the newer trucks, you probably don't need to know how to do electrical troubleshooting. Because if you have electrical problems, they're probably well beyond your ability to troubleshoot. Like, could you imagine if you took a 2020 TRD Pro on the Rubicon and it just like went into limp mode all of a sudden? Like, what would you do?
Yeah.
That would be it. And it's just because, like, a sensor's unplugged or, like, a wire got broke by a rock or something, and then you can't drive it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's hard to say. Yeah, so just bring a spare tire. But we don't, sometimes. Like, if we're doing the Rubicon, I probably wouldn't bring a spare tire. It's just 12 miles. You can get out with that on a flat tire. The tires are flat anyways. You air them down.
Yeah.
It's just...
I mean, yeah, I guess so.
Airing down is just a flat tire with more steps.
I guess so.
Well, I think on that note, we're going to wrap it up. So we love you guys. We hope you stay safe and you are safely enjoying the trails, keeping in mind the corona and the rioting and the murder bees and the asteroid. And the alternate universe where time travels backwards. And the fact that they admitted that there are UFOs.
The tigers.
And the tigers that got out of the zoo. And the monkeys that stole the COVID-19 blood samples.
And the cannibal rats.
So keeping all those things in mind. Sweet dreams.